From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Wednesday, April 3rd, and we have a bit of a special episode today with two eclipse-related features. In the meantime, here are today's headlines. The Vermont Senate yesterday approved a bill that would create a new disaster mitigation fund for municipalities. Addison County Senator Ruth Hardy says the state needs to do more to help communities prepare for natural disasters, like the historic flooding that hit Vermont last July.
It is the government's job to mitigate emergencies and to help the public stay safe when they do occur. This bill will help Vermont do just that.
But it's unclear whether towns and cities will actually benefit from the program, at least right away. Lawmakers have not yet appropriated any money for the proposed disaster mitigation fund. Senate budget writers say financial resources for next year's budget are tight, and they say they haven't determined yet how much, if any, revenue will be available for the new fund. The Vermont Senate also took an initial step toward a potential amendment to the state constitution yesterday. Senate lawmakers gave unanimous approval to a proposed amendment that protects the rights of Vermont workers to organize and collectively bargain. The Senate vote is the first step in the constitutional process for the amendment. Backers of the proposal say it would ensure labor rights are not scaled back by the federal government or future legislatures. Chittenden Senator Phil Baruth told his colleagues it is critical to enshrine the authority of labor unions, especially as they're under siege in other states.
When I look at this particular amendment, I look on it very much as I did the amendment we made to the Constitution in terms of reproductive rights. We are strengthening what we have, and we're protecting it from going away, which can happen in the legislative blink of an eye.
The measure now goes to the House. If the House passes it this session, it must be approved by the Senate and House in the 2025 session before it goes before voters in 2026. The owner of the former Green Mountain College campus in Pulteney wants to convert three school buildings into condos and a destination hotel. Raj Bhakta with Regenerative Land Holdings, LLC, has applied for an Act 250 change of use permit to create 18 residential condos and 93 hotel units. The former college's main dining hall will remain an event space with an added micro distillery. According to the permit, the campus library will be repurposed as storage space and stormwater runoff areas will be expanded. The 185-year-old liberal arts college closed in 2019 and was bought the following year by Bhakta for $5 million. Bhakta's wife runs a private school on the property. New England power grid operators have been preparing for the total solar eclipse. ISO New England's Mike Nolan says on a sunny April day, solar power provides as much as half of the region's electric supply. Monday's eclipse will reduce that briefly to zero, and Nolan says operators will be ready.
We know with 100% certainty where the moon is going to be and what time the eclipse is going to start and what time it's going to peak and what time it's going to end. So much so that we can do dry runs in our simulator. We can train the operators to be ready for everything.
If needed, Nolan says some generating plants will be asked to increase their power output. Standby generators can also be brought online. How big an impact the eclipse has will depend on the weather. Nolan points out if the day proves very cloudy, the region's power grid will be using electricity from other sources anyway. Coming up, how to keep pets safe and calm during the total solar eclipse, and an innovative way to help people with impaired vision experience the event. That's after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to VITA for their support. VITA, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit veda.org to start your next chapter.
On Monday, Vermonters will experience a total solar eclipse, with a wide swath of the state falling directly inside the path of totality. With less than a week to go, a lot of folks are finalizing their viewing plans. But what about eclipse day safety concerns for our pets? Sure, tips for calming nerves during thunderstorms or fireworks displays are widely known, but whether it's a dog or a chicken, are there any special considerations for domestic animals during a total solar eclipse? To learn more, Vermont Public's Jen Jarecki recently spoke with Vermont State Veterinarian Dr. Kristen Haas.
Okay, let's start inside, so to speak. What considerations should listeners make for their indoor pets on eclipse day?
I would say that the best thing to keep in mind with indoor pets, thinking of especially dogs and cats and those that are more socially oriented towards us, toward their owners, is to remember that they don't know what's going on. And for them, this event will be very much like any other normal day. And the level of either awareness or perhaps anxiety that they might have could most likely be generated from our cues, from human cues. So if we are calm and relaxed and enjoying the day, then they likely will be as well.
So having been a dog walker for years, I can totally appreciate the need to keep those routines intact. But what if you have a kitty that loves to go outside? I mean, with all the extra traffic and visitors that are expected that day, should outdoor cats have their routines disrupted on April 8th?
I think outdoor cats are going to maybe have to take a little bit of a break from being outdoors. I think to your point, this is more to do with the human component of the day than it is to do with the animal component of the day. Left to their own devices, outdoor cats would probably be fine being outside. They have no real reason to look up at the sky spontaneously, so there isn't a risk of any damage or injury to them. In that regard, it's more a matter of, as you say, the perhaps increased traffic. If houses that have outdoor cats are closer to roads that normally are not busy or not that busy at certain times of the midday, we can expect them to perhaps be a little bit busier. The risk of car interactions perhaps rises a bit. And just the overall, you know, change in their external environment is going to be different. So if people can stomach having their outdoor cats a little angry at them for a very short period of time, it might be ideal to keep them in somewhere where they can be safe.
So, Kristen, you mentioned that our pets really take their cues from us. You know, let's say someone's really excited about going to an eclipse viewing party and they want to bring their dog along. What might you say to that?
I understand the desire to do that. I spend a lot of time with my dogs and try to take them to different places and have different experiences with them. I would say in this particular instance, just because we don't really know what the level of, you know, human disruption and level of increased population and all of that sort of thing is going to be, I think it's probably best to leave pets home from viewing parties.
What advice would you give to farmers or any outdoor pet owners who may get unexpected visitors in their fields on eclipse day?
Well, I would hope that any visitors that we might have in Vermont who are listening to this episode take this to heart. And as you said, stay on path because we want to make sure that not only the people stay safe, but our animals stay safe and enclosed. But to help delineate that line between on path and off path, farmers and livestock owners should just make sure that if their fence lines and other pasture areas abut along a roadway or other public trafficway, then just making sure that their fences are intact. They might want to put up signage that, you know, says private property or please respect the animals. So just making it as clear as possible in a pleasant, friendly way that these areas are off limits. If there is a way to, within the animal's normal routine, to perhaps sequester them to paddocks or pastures that are away from the road, then that certainly would also be fine. And that way there's, you know, an additional buffer between the public trafficked areas and those that are private property and contain animals.
Kristen, what are you most looking forward to about the total solar eclipse?
I am looking very much forward to, I found online a site that I believe is being, it's a study that's being sponsored and run or hosted, I guess, by University of North Carolina. And you can observe one or more animals during the eclipse and then send your findings into this group that's gathering data on animal behavior, both wild and domestic during this event. So I'm actually now looking forward to contributing to that. And I have to pick my animal, and I think it will be my three-legged dog to see how a three-legged dog manages the eclipse. So I will be a mini scientist for a little bit and observing my pup while also enjoying the eclipse. So I think that's what I'm looking the most forward to at this point.
That was Vermont State veterinarian Dr. Kristen Haas speaking to host Jen Jarecki. And now, another eclipse story for your listening pleasure. Have you ever wondered about the sound of a solar eclipse? Those are some of the sounds a special device makes when detecting subtle changes in light or darkness during an eclipse. The device is a 4x2-inch plastic rectangle called Light Sound. As Vermont Public's Mary Ingus reports, it was developed in 2017 so folks who are blind or have low vision can experience solar eclipses in a new way.
That includes the one that will sweep parts of the U.S. on Monday, including Vermont. When that happens, many people will realize the eclipse isn't just something you see. Temperatures will also drop 5 to 15 degrees under clear skies. Nocturnal animals might begin their nighttime routines. These are all things you can hear and feel.
This event is really opening the eyes to a lot of people that events and experiences in life don't necessarily have to be one-dimensional in their approach.
That's Daniel Norris, the Director of Adult Services at the Vermont Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. He has a juvenile form of macular degeneration called Stargardt's. And for Norris and many others in Vermont's blind and low vision community, they use adaptive technology every day. And a device like Light Sound can go a long way toward making the eclipse more accessible.
There's a lot of things that can be done to adapt if you have a sensory impairment so that you're just as involved and just as included in the things that are happening in our world.
For another example of adaptive tech, Norris shared an 11x18 book called Getting a Feel for Eclipses that was produced in collaboration with NASA in the lead up to next week's eclipse. With raised plastic pages, it's a tactile representation of the moon and the umbra, or shadow, it will create moving across the country. Norris sees the upcoming eclipse as a great opportunity to increase awareness of inclusivity, to be able to look through someone else's eyes at a once-in-a-lifetime event.
For a lot of people, it kind of suddenly blows their mind, and they're like, whoa, oh, I hadn't thought of that before, you know? And then the idea of experiencing something a different way becomes very interesting, and it really opens people's minds.
Harvard astronomer Allison Barilla is part of the team that designed Light Sound for the last total solar eclipse that swept the country. She says these devices have a MIDI component, which musicians might be familiar with, and that allowed the developers to program in instrument sounds.
So the way we've done it is we've mapped the brightest light to a flute sound. The mid-range kind of goes into a clarinet sound. And then the lowest range kind of goes into like a low kind of clicking.
And the clicking tone is meant to sound like insects at night. Light Sound is free from the Harvard lab, and the plans to build it are open source. Over the last few months, Barilla says volunteers at several workshops built and shipped out close to 900 devices to destinations all along the path of totality. Still, that did not quite meet demand for over 2,500 Light Sound requests. State officials say Vermont could see up to 200,000 out-of-state visitors on eclipse day, depending on weather. Norris, with the Vermont Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, is feeling that energy here. People have been reaching out to him after finding media coverage of Light Sound.
I will tell you that the Light Sound device has created a buzz amongst the community of people who are blind and visually impaired in a way that I haven't seen before.
That includes Alec Wolf, who's been blind since childhood. Since 2020, he's produced an online radio show called The Variety Show from the basement of his parents' home in Milton.
Live on the Wolf Den Network, and now dropping the needle and spinning the turntable.
On eclipse day, he plans to spin lots of sun and moon and celestially themed tunes. Wolf also plans to take his whole radio setup onto his folks' back deck and broadcast the show from there. And he'll help make the eclipse accessible to his radio audience, many of whom are also blind or visually impaired, by broadcasting the sounds of his Light Sound device as we near totality.
I think there's just such a curiosity for not only just blind and visually impaired people, but people that are sighted. You know, what is actually happening up there in the sky, right?
You may also get a chance to try out the Light Sound device for yourself. The Vermont Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired plans to fan out at 3 eclipse-centered events on April 8th in Burlington, also St. Johnsbury, and Montpelier, with devices in hand. John Thomas, Director of Development for the Association, says the eclipse has the capacity to bring unlikely communities together, sighted or not. When a partial eclipse passed over Brattleboro in the 1990s, Thomas recalled people streaming out of their stores to watch from the sidewalk. He was using a small piece of smoked glass to view the eclipse when others approached to ask if they could use it too.
And these two people came by and very tattooed, very pierced. I hand it to them, and as I'm handing it to them, these two older women were going by, and they kind of lingered because they were looking, and they were easily in their 80s, and we were lined up. There were five of us, and it just, I thought, if it weren't for the eclipse, none of us probably would be even talking.
This is probably a good time to share a reminder that anyone who views the eclipse, whether they're sighted or not, should use proper eyewear. Of course, there's a big chance clouds are hanging over Vermont on the upcoming eclipse day, a wet blanket on everyone's experience. If that's the case, Daniel Norris, Thomas's colleague at the association, says you might want to make sure there's a light sound device nearby.
If everybody's blinded by the event because of clouds, this might be the most interesting thing that's happening.
So if you're at one of the many eclipse events on Monday, during totality, along with the oohs and ahs, tune in your ears to also see if you can hear something else in the distance. For Vermont Public, I'm Mary Yengish.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Peter Hirschfeld, Bob Kinzel, the New England News Collaborative, and Nathaniel Wilson. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelyan, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.